Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Western Focus podcast. I'm your host, Cobalt, and for this week, I'll be the only host, as unfortunately, it's Steve's turn this time around to step away. He, of course, has got a bit of life stuff going on this week, so he'll be taking care of that, and I'll be here to run the show for this week. Of course, since the LCS is still on hiatus, this will be an LEC and Cobalt-only show to wrap up the spring season. We do have some exciting series to talk about here as we just wrapped up our finals weekend for the spring split. And since, of course, this is the league that I know best, we're set for plenty of fun times today. So hope you're as excited as I am for all of this. But before any of that, some really quick news that I want to cover, just so everyone, of course, is staying in the loop on Western League. First, on the LCS side, really quick, not really news, but we already knew that Reaper was joining C9, and since then we have 100% confirmed this fact. We did see that official post from the C9 Twitter account, and we also heard rumors last week that Thanatos might potentially be coming over to C9 to replace Fudge in the top lane. That since then has also been fully confirmed by the C9 Twitter account. Fudge will be sticking around under the C9 umbrella for at least the upcoming future while he figures out what's up next, but we do know that he will at minimum be benched for the summer, and Thanatos will be coming over from the LCK Challengers League in order to fill in instead. So that is now fully set in stone. And then on the LEC side, we also do have quite a few updates going on. So number one, Vitality has decided that despite their impressive top four finish this past split, they're going to be benching Daglis in the jungle, and in favor, they will be bringing in KC's tier two jungler, who's Linkus. He has been a quite well-performing prospect. We've heard a lot of things about him, and he was at least in the conversation for a potential tier one KC adjustment. But of course, we do now see that he has moved over to the other French organization in the LEC instead, in Vitality. Daglis, we don't know where he's off to next, but presumably he'll be either returning to the Tier 2 League or sticking around on the bench. And then we also have a confirmed change to the LEC side of KC, which is, to my enormous shock and probably a lot of other people, they've decided also to make a change to their jungle position by benching Bo, and their replacement that they found is Closer, who's spent the past long while in the LCS and is now going to be returning to Europe in hopes of raising KC out of that pit of despair they're in with those two back-to-back 10th place finishes. This, I think, is probably the very last place I'd be looking to make any changes to KC, if I'm honest with you. There's definitely far more pressing issues. I'm looking down there in the bot lane at you, Targimus, in support. But I guess this is where they wanted to start off. This does come with the caveat that there's plenty of time left. MSI is still around the corner, and it should be about another, I don't know, 7-8 weeks before the LEC resumes. KC still has plenty of time to make additional changes, but this is not the place that I'd be looking at all. So hopefully there's more coming. We'll look, keep our eyes out for that. And then in terms of unconfirmed changes, just things that have kind of been swirling around in the rumor mill, there's rumors that since Bo is, of course, technically teamless at this point in time, he may very well join SK since he and Niski have been pretty buddy-buddy as of late. That's something that's still kind of just a whisper. We've seen that Exekick has kind of been hinting at it. Niski, of course, has been plenty hinting at it on Twitter. But this hasn't passed through Sheep Esports or anything like that as of yet, so no idea whether it's fake news or whether it's something that is potentially happening. Who knows? That's still yet to be determined. And then finally, not an update, but just the fact that GX still has a unconfirmed situation. They still have no top laner and potentially a missing jungler as well. So we can definitely expect at least a couple more adjustments to come just before we hit the next split. But with all that being said, that's the news for the past week. As far as I am aware, I checked Twitter just before starting up and there's nothing new as of now. So we'll see if there's anything upcoming. But for now, we will be jumping right into our recaps of this past week of the finale to the LEC Spring Split. And of course, we do need to start where the weekend started, which was that Saturday lower bracket final series between Team BDS and Fnatic. And in a lot of ways, like a lot of the LEC seems to have been this split when G2 isn't involved, this was a extremely close matchup. And just like both Steve and I predicted, this did go to the distance right up to five games. But considering that I voted BDS and Steve voted Fnatic, only one of us ended up right. And that credit does in fact go to Steve this time around, as Fnatic was able to take the five-game series against BDS. And unfortunately, the scriptwriters decided to hurt them in the worst possible way, because BDS have once again been reverse swept just before they were able to lock MSI for the second year in a row. We saw that happen last year to them, where G2 of course fell out in fourth place in the spring split, which would mean that whoever wins that split would have gone to MSI. And in that grand final, BDS went up 2-0 against Mad Lions, and Mad Lions were able to pull off the reverse sweep. And this time, no different. It came a little bit early in that lower bracket final this time, but it was still essentially the final area where BDS could have secured them a spot, and unfortunately they let it slip. Though to their credit, I do have to give them the fact that games 1 and 2 of this series were extremely convincing. Not to say that Fnatic was out of it completely, but they really didn't look at any point in time like they were likely to win those couple of games. And the biggest asset for BDS in those two was, of course, the team fighting, like it has always been. Plenty of great engages, plenty of great Wongbo combos. They just looked like the better team all around. But the other thing that was a little bit more impressive is that, of course, we know BDS to be a late-game teamfighting team, but they also had pretty good laning phases too, and that's sort of where the surprise comes in, where BDS really were playing impressive gameplay. But unfortunately, as soon as Game 3 hit, that BDS curse ended up coming through, and it just became exactly like that series we saw last year, where all of a sudden, I don't know where it came from or what caused it, but BDS just seemed to stop functioning as a team all of a sudden. And then as soon as Game 3 was lost, they were getting picked off by Razorok early. Teamfights stopped looking good. Fnatic brought all the momentum over to their side. They were able to take that Nexus. And then BDS just completely mental boom from there, where the rest of the series in Games 4 and 5 were just as one-sided, but this time in favor of Fnatic. And while part of that is BDS mental booming, I do also have to give props to Fnatic on this half, where they really focused, they kind of brought it back to where, you know, when the going gets tough, you want to bring it back to what you're most good at. And in Fnatic's case, that is the fact that they gave Razorok the ability to create early advantages. He got agency picks, something that he could create pressure with in an active way. And then they also set themselves up through the rest of the draft for some pretty good skirmishes throughout the game. Either with Razorok, without Razorok, it didn't really matter. They just had some good fights. Namely, in the top lane, we saw that one instance where Oskarinen was able to pull off the Cassante ult to drag over Shao over a wall away from the top lane turret. Pretty much solo kills him despite Razorok kind of standing around there. And it was just things like that where Fnatic was just playing like the better mechanical team and the better cohesive unit as a team. And in a way, despite the fact that I did predict BDS and I was kind of hoping to see them represent internationally, I am kind of okay with this result. Neither of these two teams have looked especially clean as of late. I think that's kind of been a trend in the entirety of the LEC. A lot of people have been feeling a little bit down the fact that EU just isn't up to the level we've seen from them in the past. But when you really look holistically at these two teams, I do think that Fnatic is probably the roster that has at least that slight bit more potential to, at minimum, avoid embarrassing EU at MSI. Of course, still not super hopeful about how they'll perform against the better teams in the LCK and the LPL, but at the very least, I'm hoping that they'll be able to hold their own against the minor region teams, as they of course have to fight through play-ins. And then maybe if they run into NA at some point, they won't have a repeat of what happened to us last year, and we'll be able to, I don't know, even if we lose, we'll keep it competitive. Though right now, if I'm being honest with you, I probably would put my money on FlyQuest over Fnatic, at least just off the kind of form that we've been seeing from those two rosters as of late. And of course, since that series resolved and Fnatic was able to take it in the end, they have in fact locked themselves a spot at MSI, at minimum second seed as of this series, and they also punched themselves a ticket to play that final series, that grand final on Sunday, against the upper bracket winners G2. Now this series, unfortunately, will mark the end of an era. Now I'm not really talking about the fact that G2 has ended their dynasty, or that Fnatic have kind of broken out of their kind of restraints they've had over the past few years. We still see that G2 is in fact the best, and Fnatic haven't achieved anything since 2018. That part is still true. Instead, the change that I am talking about is the fact that Fnatic seems to have ended their allergy to the number one. Now, it's a partial one because they did still lose the series. They weren't able to secure first place. That still goes to G2 in a 3-1 fashion. But at the very least, they arrived in the LEC studio on Sunday, and they had one mission that they executed on, and that's to disprove Steve's narrative by winning the game one. And then they called it a day. But at least they had that. They were able to break that number one curse, took game one against G2, and then, you know, after that, the rest is history. But what a monster performance that game was. And it's mainly off the back of June's Renata, of all people. There were at least three separate instances that I can remember off the top of my head where G2 was engaging on Fnatic. The fight was looking pretty good for them. Fnatic ended up kind of having to run away, back off, create some space. And it's June's Renata ultimates that were those buying space, where they he ults at least like three or four people, depending on what the context is, of course, gives Fnatic a bit of room to breathe. They reposition, set up whatever it is, and then they're able to break apart G2 and kind of kill that momentum they had by engaging those plays. And I can't lie, after I saw the Nexus fall in this game, I was sweating a bit. G2 still decided to pull off, to my surprise, that lane swapping strategy that I didn't think would be making a comeback, but they tried it again. And Fnatic was able, in fact, to deal with it, where G2 wasn't creating quite the level of leads that they were against BDS last week. They were still kind of turning it in their favor because they were able to avoid those unfavorable bot lane matchups. But at least Fnatic was able to keep it toe-to-toe, kind of keep it stable leading into the mid-game, and then they were able to close out in the end by using those small leads they were building and then break apart the Nexus off that. But then, you know, it did end the way that we were kind of expecting, where G2 did win the next three games in a row. But even then, despite the fact that they won and earned the title, I can't really call this a clean series from G2 by any means. In the earlier stages of those three games that they won, Fnatic was creating leads more often than not. And of course, G2 still, to their credit, they decided that even though they lost game one, they would still go with the lane swapping strategy, with the exception of one of the games where Fnatic turned around on them instead. But I personally would call this Fnatic's best series of the year if we're only focusing on sort of the early to mid-game transitions. I think that they genuinely were playing quite well. But then if you put it all together, the late game was still a factor, and then Fnatic just wasn't really playing to win at that point, to their detriment, of course. In Game 2, Fnatic allowed Yike to steal a Baron off them. They decided to make a play on it at about 21-22 minutes, so pretty early, but they were in the lead, and they decided to take that gamble. Yike goes in with the sudden flash on Volibear and smites it faster than I even was able to react, but he got it. And then they nearly got aced to boot in that fight. And that really swung around the momentum of that game, brought it back in G2's favor. And in a later fight, Fnatic employed the most controversial strategy, which is go in one at a time and see what happens. And of course, if G2 has numbers advantage, that's not really going to work. So G2 pick off two people first because Yike was able to get off a Volibear heal. Then humanoid TP's in, dies. Then June tries to come in, dies. And then G2 run it down the mid lane. And despite Fnatic sort of starting to respawn, they were able to close out that game, take the win. It's 1-1. We then transition into game 3. And this was leaning very much G2's favor, but still staying very even. And then Fnatic overcommits to the defense of their top lane inhib. And that kind of allows Caps, who's playing Azir, to sneak in through the mid lane and walk up to the Nexus. Only Razork was really there to stop it. I forget who, but one other person tried to join him, but it wasn't in time. I think it was Noah. Caps kills Noah and then gets the Nexus. That's game 3 in G2's favor. But then game 4 is probably the one that I need to give special treatment to for two main reasons. Number one, on the Fnatic side, Oscarinen is probably the LVP of this particular game, where G2, once again, were starting off with a sort of semi-lane swapping strategy, I guess, where G2's bot lane did in fact start in the bot lane. Broken Blade decided not to start in the top lane, and he was kind of hanging around in the jungle on Zac. And then G2 starts setting up to dive Fnatic's bot lane at about level 2, so pretty early in the game. And at this point, I think that looking at the position of the two teams, it really could have been in Fnatic's favor. Razork was hanging out near his Krugs, so he could have very easily walked over. He was in fog, G2 didn't know. He could have walked over and helped as that dive started. And then if Oscar TPs, then of course they have the 4 versus 3. They're able to pick off the members of G2 who are under their turret. They're forced to run. Probably at least two, three of, maybe even all three of them die, and then Fnatic could have very much pulled off a win off that. But instead, we saw that Oscarinen hard forced that TP much sooner than he probably should have, pulled the trigger really, really early, and then G2 seeing this immediately back off. Broken Blade hops into fog and TPs back top lane, since of course he walked down to bot lane. And then this immediately gives Oscar a lead in the early levels because he's able to farm waves. Oscarinen is now away from, he doesn't have his TP cooldown, and he has to back to base and walk up to top. So kind of recognizing this fact, he decides to reset right away. And I'm not sure if this was Envision or not, but it was a very fast reset. And the rest of G2, outside of Broken Blade, is still hanging around. So they decide to re-dive at this point. And with, I can't remember if Razork walked away, or maybe it was just a 3v3 at this point, they're able to execute that dive well, kill off Noah, deny him a lot of farm, because he's not there to, of course, collect it, and then he's sort of out for the rest of the game at that point. He just wasn't really able to find a way back in. G2 continued to focus him down, and I think that this at least partially does need to go to Oscarinen's detriment, where if he stuck around, sure, he's going to miss a couple waves and that puts him behind, but he's a Cassante, whereas Noah is playing Varus. I think you'd rather have an advantage on Varus. So really bad from Oscarinen there. But then the other side that I also have to call kind of detriment to is Hansama, who, despite having that really early good start on Jinx, he gets a 4-0 start thanks to G2's efforts. Noah, on the other hand, is completely broke. In two back-to-back late-game fights, thanks to Humanoid still staying even, Razork doing pretty well, and then Oscarinen on Cassante still doing pretty well, there's back-to-back fights where Hansama decides to save his flash for next game for some reason, gets shuffled by Humanoid's Azir, and then that gets him blown up. Hansama can't contribute to the fight, and considering most of the gold is on him, Fnatic is able to win those fights with the rest of their team, of course. And that very, very nearly allowed Fnatic to steal that game right back into their own hands and bring us to a game 5. But then, of course, in a later fight still, Hansama was able to free fire, he got a reset off Oscarinen and cleans up, gets a pentakill, and then G2 just kind of finishes that one off. So this by no means was a great series from either side. Of course, Fnatic were the weaker looking team overall since they weren't able to close out besides game 1. And it's sort of a question of, you know, you have Fnatic doing well in the early game, G2 kind of griefing, and then in the late game you have G2 doing better, but Fnatic griefing. I don't think either team played quite to their best when you put all things together. Kind of an unfortunate end to a rather lackluster LEC year so far. But in the end, we do see that things have been kept status quo, and G2 have secured their 14th LEC title. They've locked the first seed at MSI, Fnatic will go through play-ins as the second seed, and that is the LEC wrapped up for this split. Now the other thing, since of course we don't have anything to predict this time around, the LEC has concluded, we're going to be bringing in the All-Pro list. Now, considering the fact that the LEC is probably going to take the boring option and once again vote all five G2 players, which neither Steve nor I think is correct, we're going to bring in our unbiased and more valid LEC All-Pro list, which kind of mixes things up a little bit, pulls a few players from a variety of teams, and keeps things at least a little bit interesting. Now, we don't have Steve with us, of course, like I said, but I did want to at least bring him here with us in spirit, and that is that I asked him to send me his All-Pro list blind. We didn't discuss it at all between us. I didn't know what he was going to put. He didn't know what I was going to put. We drafted our own lists on our own. And then he sent that over to me so I could at least shout him out. And as it turns out, great minds once again think alike, because our two lists are nearly identical. Though, at least to me, that's not too shocking, because unlike last split, I don't really see too much argument for anyone except these five players, with a caveat that I have a sort of honorable mention of a sixth one in there. Now, of course, starting in order in the top lane, the both of us between Steve and I did vote at Photon as our first All-Pro player, though I'd say that this is kind of where we differ a little bit, that I gotta give at least some credit to Broken Blade. He's probably the easier choice between the two. Of course, he's on the winning roster, and he's no slouch. He contributed a lot to that. But he's sort of the easy choice just because of that. He's been a great asset. He's been winning his lanes fairly consistently. Of course, continues to be a very big both teamfight presence and side lane threat, depending on the game state. And then, of course, in these last two BO5s, considering the fact that G2 decided to adopt a lane swapping strategy, it was kind of off the back of his sacrifice where he was the focus of his opponents. He wasn't really able to have too much fun in the early game, had to sacrifice farm, sacrifice experience, did his best just to stay relevant on tank champions, but that still was an asset to the team because he played that pretty well under the circumstances, was able to keep himself in the game, and off the back of that, turned himself into a factor in the later portions. So credit very much to Broken Blade from me, but I'd probably put him on my second All-Pro list if I had one. Instead, both of us between Steve and I did give this credit to Photon, and that's sort of just because of the rise he's had. I, of course, haven't been nearly as big on him as the rest of the LEC fanbase seems to have been. I've heard that a lot of people liked him last year. I wasn't really on that train myself. But I think that in this spring split, at least, he's definitely risen and kind of proven why he's been on the radar for so many people. And sure, you got to give credit on Vitality within that team, that Karzi and Vito were probably the primary carries more often than not. But I do think that Photon, as a top lane representative, was very, very consistently the backup guy. He, in a number of cases, in my memory, has pulled out carries like Rumble, carries like Jace, piloted those champions very, very well. And despite the fact that he may not have been the carry threat, he sometimes put out very big damage numbers and pretty consistently was sort of the setup guy, the secondary carry, if you will, that set up the fights with either the poke on Jace or a good Rumble ultimate to kind of start things off. And then that was sort of the catalyst that allowed Karzi and Vito those pop-off moments. So he was very, very much a key point for Vitality, proved why they stuck around with him coming into this year, and so he's got to be the top lane All-Pro vote. Then we transition into the jungle. This is where we kind of step into a little bit more boring territory, because once again, carrying over from last split, both Steve and I have put Razork as our vote. Not a whole lot has changed in this jungle role. Of course, between winter and spring, the only thing that maybe is different is that Razorak is perhaps an even bigger backbone for Fnatic's success. I think he's still very much shown that he's the guy to set them up in the early game. When you put him on a proactive pick, he's able to transition that very, very well. The only difference, I guess, is that the rest of the team around him has been at least a little bit proactive as compared to the last split, where they've taken a little bit of that burden off Razorak, but it still very much is the Razorak show in the end. And it kind of shows, because if you really look at the trajectory that Fnatic had in a lot of their games, if Razorak isn't having a good game, it's rare that the rest of Fnatic will have a good game, save for those occasional fluke pop-off moments that we've had from someone else. Like, I don't know, Noah comes c to mind for some of the performances that he's had, just not quite nearly as consistent as Razorak has been. So that vote has to stick with him. Then we move into the mid lane, and we're once again gonna have a little bit of boring here, because it's still, just like last split, it's gotta be Caps. Who else are you gonna put in this spot? Like, if you really think about it, how crazy is it that over the course of this guy's career, he's won so many titles, he's been to almost every final apart from three, the two that he was playing in 2021 G2 with Reckless, and then the one that he missed last year in spring with the current iteration of G2. And then he lost only one final that he was in against Rogue in 2022. But besides that, this guy has something like 12 different titles under his belt, both with Fnatic and G2 later on. Huge, huge credit to him. And I think that it's not really too much of a stretch to say that he's having one of, if not the best performances he's had in that career. So huge credit has to go to Caps. But the only shakeup that I'm going to give here to kind of change things around a little bit is I want to give a small shout out to Zvyru. He's not by any means a young player. He's kind of had his years. He's been playing for quite some time. But this is his rookie split, at least in a Tier 1 league here in the LEC. And in that time, just over the course of a few short weeks, he's risen very, very fast. The first two couple games, maybe the first one or two, he looks a bit shaky, but I think that makes sense considering he was a very late addition. He only had just under a week to scrim with this Heretics roster before he was promoted. So after that, after those couple games where he kind of shook off the nerves or whatever it was, he was on the rise, and it only really got better after that. And it all culminated in, of course, that final series that they played Heretics against Vitality, the one where they got unfortunately eliminated, where Zvyru's Ahri and Azir picks were the carries for Team Heretics. Off the back of Zvyru's performance, this team very, very nearly locked top four, if not for the fact that the rest of his team underperformed on that day. So credit to him. I could never really put him over Caps, and Steve, of course, agrees with me. But at least for me, I think that Zvyru would probably be second or third team All-Pro if, of course, I had one. Then we transition into the bot lane, and this is probably the role where we've seen the biggest shift, switching from winter to spring. And that's the fact that back then, Steve and I agreed on Hans-Sama as our pick. But it wasn't so much because Hans was all that special or impressive, but rather that the ADC pool within the LEC at large was looking rather underwhelming. It wasn't really that we didn't have any pop-off players, we didn't have any 1v9 kind of players. It was just sort of passenger gameplay that we've seen across the board. In spring, however, Karzi has improved very, very significantly. Now, I mentioned earlier that Photon was, of course, big in lane phase, and he was the secondary carry for Vitality. But more often than not, Karzi was, in fact, the biggest win condition for this Vitality lineup, and he was probably the only player in the LEC in the AD carry role that was more often than not playing the sort of aggressive hyper carry play style rather than a passive kind of wait for the team to set me up, get me some kills, and then I'll just be the source of damage, but rely on others to kind of set me up for that. Karzi was taking things into his own hands playing aggressively, making plays, both in the 2v2 with Hillesung or depending on what the context was, of course. He was sort of the only AD carry that stood out as a guy that wanted to take things into his own hands, which isn't really easy in this meta, to his credit, so very, very special that he was able to find those angles. Now, of course, you can point to Noah for having a sort of similar streak. I think that as Zeri has come into prominence in the meta, Noah has shown that he's still a very good pilot of that pick. But the difference that I kind of point out is that Noah didn't look nearly as confident doing it. Of course, we saw him try to engage here and there, and it didn't really work out. There were only a couple instances of it going very well. And he only, in Noah's case, could really do it consistently on Zeri, specifically on that pick. I don't think I saw anything else that was nearly as inspiring besides those couple Zeri games. So the vote here in the AD carry role does in fact have to go to Karzi. And then last but certainly not least, we have the accompaniment for the AD carry role, which is support in the bot lane. And once again, Steve and I, very similar opinions, decided to give this vote to Jun. Now, this does come with the caveat, of course, that since neither Steve nor I play support too much, our metrics for the role probably aren't at expert level. You know, we're still Platinum Emerald players that don't really play this role, and it's sort of the less easy to gauge role as well. Our metrics won't be the most reliable here, but based on the knowledge that we do have, it does kind of have to go to Jun for a variety of reasons. Now, I'm going to speak from my own kind of point of view, of course, but this comes at least partially due to recency bias because of how hard he popped off on that Renata game one against G2. As I mentioned in that recap of the series, he had multiple very, very good Renata disengage ultimates that allowed Fnatic to reposition, pop off, turn the fights that G2 may have otherwise won. And that is very much to Jun's credit, because not everyone can identify angles like that. Huge credit to him. But then the rest of the kind of process probably comes down to process of elimination, at least in my case, where I voted on Lebrov last split, and despite still coming in third with BDS, I think that Lebrov has fell off quite a bit compared to last split, and coincidentally was in fact overshadowed by Jun's performance on his signature hook champions. We saw in the regular season that Jun pulled out the Blitzcrank at least a couple times, and then towards the BO3 stage I recall at least one game as well where that Blitzcrank on Jun looked really, really good. So that of course puts him above Lebrov. Then we turn our attention to Mickey, who did again win the split with G2, but just like in Winter, he's been sort of an inter. He's kind of had that instinct in him where he takes fights where he might not need to, or plays a little bit too forward where he shouldn't, or whatever the case may be. He's an aggressive type of player, and that's in a lot of cases good, but in other cases it's been kind of to his detriment. He ranked up plenty of deaths, and that's not good, so can't really give it to Mickey. Then we turn our attention to Hillesung, who secured fourth place with Vitality, and he has, to his credit, curbed some of that inting instinct that Mickey wasn't able to. But I'd attribute at least part of his success to Karzi doing really well. The two of them are, of course, a pairing, and I'm sure that Hillesung contributed, but I do think that Karzi was sort of the 1v9 player, and by extension, that reflected well on Hillesung, so I can't give it to him in good confidence. And then the only other player, after we've exhausted that list, that I think deserves any kind of mention is Trimby, who, of course, took the winter off. He's once again joined into the LEC, stepped in as a mid-year plug-in to raise his team in Heretics' case this time, though unfortunately because he suffers from his team's elimination in 5th and 6th place, in combination with the fact that, you know, in that final series, he had that kind of unfortunate instance where he headbutted Oscarinen directly into his team, kind of a miscommunication with Zvyru. There were instances like that spread out throughout the split where Trimby wasn't quite on that level we've seen him in before, so I can't really in good confidence give the vote to him. So then, after we've gone through that whole thing, Jun is the last remaining member on the list, And despite there being that recency bias, like I mentioned, I do think that over the course of the split, we have seen a consistent enough level of performance from him as he supported Noah or popped off through Rome's or whatever it is. I think that both Steve and I are pretty comfortable giving the award to June. Now, I'm personally still kind of on the fence about the fact that Fnatic decided to slot him in over Trimby. I don't think that he's quite been enough of an upgrade over Trimby to justify that replacement. But if you kind of remove that fact out of the equation and just focus on June's performance in isolation, he definitely has earned my respect as a deserving member of the LEC at large. And of course, seeing as I put him on my All-Pro list, he has proven to be quite a big asset to Fnatic. So that's kind of the list. Steve and I agreed on pretty much all these points. Just, you know, my honorable mentions to people like Broken Blade as well as Zvyru. Steve only put together one All-Pro list. I'm not really sure where he stands on those. But we do align at least in where we stand on the first ranking players in every role. So there you have it. We have Photon in the top lane, Razork in the jungle, Caps in the mid lane, Karzai AD carry, June support. That is the official Western Focus All-Pro LEC roster for the Spring Split. And with all of that being said, this is going to be a bit of a shorter one. You know, trying my best here. Talking alone is a little rough on the voice, so thank you for bearing with me. Tried to live up to the potential of what this podcast can be, but I am missing Steve a little bit. Tried to keep him at least a little bit involved. I don't think it's quite the same not having him here, but hopefully he'll be back soon. But with that, that of course marks off the halfway point for the Western area of League of Legends here in 2024. We will be taking a bit of a gap week here next week on account of nothing really new going on in the Western sphere. Both the LEC and the LCS still will not have games. So this upcoming week, we will be taking a break. But the only note I will leave you guys off with is that even if you don't watch the LPL, their league still has not concluded. And as the last remaining league, be sure to tune in at the very least to the end of their final this upcoming Saturday, because that is where we will see the MSI play-ins draw. That will determine the route that our representatives in Fnatic from the LEC and FlyQuest from the LCS will have to take. So be sure to tune in, see where they end up getting placed. Hopefully we'll see some good stuff from them in that bracket. But otherwise, I'll leave you guys off with the usual kind of notes. Be sure to drop us a follow here to see our comeback in 2 weeks' time. We'll have the long-awaited, hopefully, LCS All-Pro list. Both Steve and I have prepped our lists. We just haven't been able to slot them into the podcast just yet. So we'll hopefully have time for that then. And then, very, very exciting, is that we will be jumping into our MSI preview, which you definitely won't want to miss. We'll be covering, of course, the results of that draw show that's coming up. Kind of give you the preparation rundown of what to expect from that MSI playoffs or play-ins bracket. And then be sure as well to give us a 5-star rating if you enjoyed. That supports us, goes a long way in spreading the news that this podcast exists. And finally, be sure to drop a follow on Twitter. The account is at norival_esports, where you'll be able to interact with us, give us some of your takes, maybe share your LEC All-Pro list. We'd love to hear about those. And as always, we'll see you when we're back in just a couple weeks. Be there.